on Norm Shealy. Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. Tonight I have with us Betsy Thompson, and we're going to talk about the What Happens If I... book. So hi, Betsy. Thanks for taking the time to come on tonight and share your story.
Oh, hi, Eva. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, how you came to write this book, and where people can find you and get a copy, and your
work
that you do.
Yeah, well, the book, I got the idea for the book when I was coming home from work one day when I was living in California, and things had not gone well for me that day, and I was I knew about the mirror theory, or the idea that whatever I put out towards others emotionally would come back to me, but I was having trouble admitting what I must have given to somebody else to explain what I had received.
And, don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought to myself, you know, what if I could ask a lot of different questions? What happens if I, and then the spirit could answer that with the action-reaction theory, that whatever we put out towards others, we receive. And so that's how the book began. And when I started to think about the titles that I could come up with, I had a lot of fun. Spirit and I thought of 33 what happens if I's, .. that the questions that we all have during our life at one time or another. And so that's how the book began.
And where can people find you?
Well, they can find me at my website, which is www.bensythompson.com, or they can find me at Amazon. If they come up to amazon.com and put in books by Betsy Otter Thompson, they all come up.
What else do you have?
Right now, The Mirror Theory, Walking Through Illusion, and Love Parent are up there with the What Happens If I book.
So tell me about your other books. Tell me the chronology of them. And I know from my own personal experience in writing books, something always happens to make the books come to be. And those stories always, people always want to hear those stories because we all struggle, and it helps us have hope to know that other people have the struggles.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to go back pretty far to the moment when I knew that I had this gift of being able to communicate with spirit. I was only about 5 years old, and my mother was always talking about the fact that I looked like her grandmother, which was my great grandmother, and she was always telling me how much I looked like her, and she loved this woman so much. And I thought that was, you know, I had trouble even at five getting along with my mother. So I thought looking like her was a definite asset. And so I decided I would talk to her at night and see if I was like her in other ways. And I didn't think anything was the least bit odd or unusual or unacceptable about that. I just did it. And a voice responded. And I had these lovely conversations for a couple of weeks. And then I assumed that everybody did this. So I went to my older sister and I told her I was talking to our great-grandmother. And who did she speak to? And the reaction I got to that was so incredibly traumatic. She just called me crazy and teased me unmercifully for weeks. And so I cut out the communication completely. And it wasn't until I was in California and almost homeless that I decided it was time for me to start taking responsibility for my life and the fact that I had made the choices that had gotten me almost homeless. No one else had made those choices. And I was responsible for where I was, and it was very empowering to begin to take responsibility, because I realized that if I had gotten myself into this mess, then I could jolly well get myself out of this mess. And one of the things I took responsibility for was this gift of being able to communicate with spirit. And so I started doing it again, and as I took the messages down, they just came into being books. And the first book was Love Parent. And because I'd had trouble, some issues with parenting, and a friend of mine who was a dear friend at the time was also having trouble, so that was the first book. And then I self-published four books on my own, And now I am in the process of getting those books up in a revised, improved version. And then after the fourth book, the next book was published, The Mirror Theory by Hampton Roads. And after that, the next book was Walking Through Illusion, and that was published by John Hunt Limited, O Books, in England. And so that's the history of the publishing. And now I'm getting the books that I wrote that were self-published into better versions and more clear and understandable and up on Amazon.
Excellent. So what are the, before we get into this book, what are the other books about?
Well, Love Paired is about really, it's kind of the book that I, when people have read this book, they said, gee, I wish I had this book before I had my children. And of course, I even wished I had this book before I had five children, but I didn't. And I guess I had to go through everything I did through my parenting to be able to write the book in the first place, you know, so you have to sometimes trip and stumble before you know how to help other people not trip and stumble. And so that's kind of, it's about how energy, you know, the children are probably wiser than we are, and they come here knowing everything, and then they get brainwashed by us and don't know, and they come here believing that they are this beautiful, wonderful energy, and then the journey is to remember who they are. But there are all kinds of interesting chapters that takes the child right up through, from infancy right up through adolescence, and it even has chapters about divorce and adoption, and it's just a beautiful story sort of told by Spirit about Spirit's point of view of what parenting is all about. And then I wrote a book called Love Human, which I have not edited yet and gotten back up on Amazon. And then I wrote the book, a book called You Are What You Think, Make Your Thoughts Delicious. And I'm still working on that one. And then the What Happens If I book came after that. And then after that came The Mirror Theory and Walking Through Illusion, which is a part of a trilogy. I've only done the first two of the trilogy, but they are about what I perceived from Spirit to be Jesus' life. And it's done in question-answer format and talks about the people who were in his family in the first book, The Mirror Theory, and the second book, Walking Through Illusion. And The Mirror Theory is basically, the premise of it is that we face ourselves and other people, and we face our emotional selves and the people in front of us, and so they usually have all the answers we need because they are showing us what we need to know about ourselves in order to grow. And there's lots of names for this. Some people call it the law of karma. Some people call it the law of attraction, cause and effect, action, reaction. But it's basically the pulling of energy back to self, which is what it's all about. And all my work is about that, Eva. So everything that I write about has that basis behind it.
I like that. I like that a lot. So tell me, from the time that you were almost homeless, how did your change in perspective affect your life?
Well, I spent the first half of my life blaming everyone else for my problems. I mean, everybody. I blamed my mother for a while, and then I blamed my husband. Anybody I could find, I blamed for my problems. And the blaming, I look at it this way, that the blaming actually took me to being homeless, because the focus you take is going to expand. So as I constantly blamed other people, I attracted people into my life who were ready to blame me for everything. And I really realized that and I got to this low point of being almost homeless, and I heard about the Course in Miracles, and I, just as I started to doing the writing, I heard about the Course in Miracles and went to a couple of Marianne's lectures, and for me, it was all about taking responsibility, and so that was really the turning point in my life, when I started saying, wait a minute, nobody else is to blame for where I am. I'm the one who got myself here, and I can jolly well get myself somewhere else. And so I remember sitting down in my living room, and I didn't think of it as prayer at the time, but I realize now it was a form of prayer. I said that I wanted to honor this gift, and I wanted to use it, and I wanted to share it, but I needed a job to support me while I did it. And 3 weeks later, I had the job working for a man at Castle Rock Entertainment, and I worked for him for the next 20 years. He was the financial guy at Castle Rock Entertainment, and then he was promoted to Warner Brothers and became the president of Warner Brothers, and I followed him there. And so I worked for him for the next 20 years and was able to retire after that. So it was like
wow,
the universe
that's an
said,
amazing story.
It is an amazing story. It was as if the universe said, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go, and it was quite a ride.
Okay, so let's talk about your book. And really what I just want you to do is you have a bunch of chapters, 33 chapters, and it's everything is what if. What happens if I do this thing? So I just kind of, do you have a copy of your book?
Yeah, I do.
Cindy?
Uh-huh.
I'd just like for you to go through and tell people what happens if they do these things. I mean, it's a simple interview. My interviews are, my show's normally about science and it's or medicine, so they're all complicated and deep, and I love this opportunity of just having simple, basic things to talk about to help people with their lives, if that's all right with you.
Sure, absolutely. Are there any chapters that are particularly interesting to you that you would want to talk about?
Let's see. Life without integrity. Let's start there.
Okay.
To live without integrity.
Yeah. Well, when you live without integrity. Pardon me?
Integrity is a big thing to me.
Yes, it is. And when you live without integrity, the world seems like a very mysterious place. Because if you think that you can give something to other people and not have it, other people give it to you, then you're always confused about why life is the way it is. And the way I look at it is that everybody can feel what's going on inside of you. They may not identify exactly what that feeling is about, but they feel, because feelings are your reality, and nothing in the illusion can separate our feelings. And so basically we are all one, and we are feeling each other. And I can give you a personal experience in reference to this, because I worked for someone one time where I was having a hard time getting along with my boss, and I would go home and I would complain about this person and complain and think of all the things I thought they were doing wrong and all the things, all the mistakes I thought they were making, just a very negative point of view. And when I was in the office with this person, they would react to that feeling, although I never said anything in front of them and I never said anything even behind their back. I just said it at home to myself. And so I had this vibration about me that she wasn't doing a good enough job, or she wasn't right for the job, or that kind of a feeling. And it got very uncomfortable, and I was sort of experimenting with this idea of emotional action-reaction at the time. And so I remember thinking to myself that I would change my vibration about this situation. And so I started looking for all the assets of this job, the good things about this person, what she did well instead of what she didn't do well, and you know, how she was good for the job, not how she was not good for the job. And it was really a sort of pattern of getting into a new habit of looking at it in a new way. And just like you get into a negative role and you keep finding more and more negative things, you can do the opposite with a positive and keep finding more and more positive things. And this is what made me a believer, because the whole relationship changed because my vibration towards her changed, and she reacted to the change in my vibration and my what I was putting out there. So it's the idea that even if you think your thoughts and your feelings are secret to other people, they really are not. And so you must live, you know, in the idea, if you know, I could read the minds of others, what would I hope to find there? And if others could read my mind, if my mind were an open book to others, what would they feel comfortable reading in my mind? And so this, to me, is what finding integrity is about, is behaving in a way that you would like people to behave with you. And if you don't, if you think that the picture is supposed to make sense, regardless of what you're doing and feeling and giving out to other people, you're always going to be in a state of complete confusion.
So how long did it take before you got a change in reaction from the woman?
Very quickly, because as soon as my vibration changed, she noticed the change and she felt the change. And so it was very quickly, very quickly.
Was it? Did she, let's see, how do I word this? Did she talk about it, or was it just a change in how she acted? Did
she acknowledge it? It was just a different reaction. It was a different reaction to me. Because when I stopped finding all the nitpicking and complaining and found appreciation and gratitude for her in the job, then she was also changing her opinion of me and was having a more appreciation for me. So if we hadn't been able to find that adjustment that we were both going to move into a better space, then I probably would have moved on to another job, or she would have moved on to another job, because we wouldn't have been compatible. But it was the willingness of her to respond to the change in me that kept us together and made it work.
Okay. So let's talk about the something that everyone does, tell their sob stories to manipulate, even though they don't necessarily realize they're trying to manipulate, maybe, but telling sob stories.
Yes. Well, I had a great. I mean, I think we all come here with a sob story, because I think we want to have challenges when we come here, and so we set up the challenges that we think will work for us in terms of finding release, forgiveness, and that therefore the transformation or the miracle that follows it. And I think that the sob story is wherever life feels tragic, overwhelming, or unfair. It's wherever we can't understand what is with us or why. It's wherever we can't find answers that make any sense. It's wherever we feel that others are responsible for our pain. And this is the sob story, and I think this is what we manipulated in our very deepest divine powers, because this is where we knew the release we needed could be found. And so I think that, I turned my sob story around by looking at it differently. I think that I was using it for so long to as an excuse for everything that went wrong in my life. So I was always looking at it in a negative way, and as I focused on it in a negative way, the negativity around it expanded, and then I attracted a lot of people to me who tried to manipulate me through their sob story. So it's, you know, I was always meeting my mirror. So I turned it around by asking myself, what have I learned about myself because of my sob story, and how have I gained independence and responsibility from actually seeing it differently and looking at it differently and asking how I've grown. You know, how have people in my sob story forced me to grow? And when I started looking for the positive instead of the negative, all of a sudden I began feeling grateful for the sob story, for what it had given me, because one of the things it gave me was I was looking desperately, because the philosophy around me when I was growing up was such an anathema to me that I had to find something else that worked. And so that part of that sob story was keeping me bogged down in that old philosophy, and so it pushed me to get a philosophy that worked for me. And the fact that my mother and I had such a hard time getting along with her and couldn't abide her, the way she looked at life and her priorities, forced me to find my priorities. And so it was almost that I could look at it back and be grateful for the motivation she had given me to find what worked for me. And after I did that, I started being grateful for the sob story instead of not being grateful, instead of having resentment towards it. And then I began to be able to forgive and release and let go of what I thought was my sob story. And I even took it a step further and asked myself, why do I need to forgive the person who was the one who motivated me to find what worked for me, who motivated me to go on my own and decide what I needed in my life? And so it was, I think we all do this. I think we all have a sob story that we think if we can just work through it and find what we learned about ourselves from experiencing the sob story, that we can find it, we can look at it in a different way, and it can become a blessing instead of a curse.
Surely. We have such a similar story. It's almost uncanny just listening to you. We write about the same things. We have chapters about the same thing. It's just really interesting. So talk to us about abandonment.
Well, there's physical abandonment, which is something that happens in the illusion of one's life, and then there's emotional abandonment, which is something that happens in the reality of our life, because I always think our emotions are really our true reality. One is the loss of a shared image in the picture, and the other is a loss of shared trust. And I think to the person who experiences both, the loss of shared trust is far more painful, because the person can leave your life and still be warmly connected to you emotionally. They can still be in touch with you. They'll be out of the picture of your life, but they're still connected to you warmly. The person who separates themselves from you emotionally, either by a lack, by a betrayal or a lack of trust, that's the kind that's very painful. So there's two kinds of abandonment, and the one that really I think is the one that hurts us is the one when the people that we trust are not trustworthy, and but you know, I also believe that these people are also chosen for, you know, they're chosen by us to be in our lives because we want to move through the idea that other people control our emotional development and remember that it stems from within ourselves. And these people are the motivation that push us to realize that we cannot really in the end depend on anyone except ourselves for our emotional growth, and we must look within for how we can make things better for ourselves, because people don't change unless they want to change, and they won't change for you, they change for themselves. And so it's we must grow from within our own decision to go deeper within ourselves and find what is true about our lives and to honor what that is.
Okay, let's talk about can't create without fear.
Well, to me, the only fearful thought you have is when you think something is wrong. Therefore, you only need to find what is right for fear to disappear. I think that, you know, we have this fear that somehow we're not going to put our lives together the way it's supposed to be put together, or when something happens, it's not what it's supposed to be happening. It's supposed to be something else, and then we get fearful that we aren't living what we're supposed to be living. But everything that we live, I think our soul has in front of us for a reason, and it is about trust. I think it's about trusting that our soul is all wise. Our soul always has us where we need to be, with the people we need to be with. It knows, it has the big picture of our life, and it has, I always say, it's the soul is looking at our life from the peanut gallery, where it has the whole view of the theater, the stage, and the actors. Whereas we're looking at it from the orchestra pit, and we can only see hardly onto the stage and not behind us, because we're so focused on what's going on with us. And so the play that we're in, the drama we're living, is exactly where we need to be and what we need to experience for the growth that we have. And if we can trust that it's all right and it's all supposed to be the way it is, and we're learning something, and we're learning what we came here to learn, what we wanted to learn, and everything is right instead of everything is wrong, there is really nothing to be fearful about.
Okay, commit suicide. That's a frightening thing.
I think I believe we're here in the human plane from a conscious decision to be here, and whether we leave by a conscious decision is up to us. I think suicide is one way of leaving, but I don't believe we find any answers from committing suicide that we can't find from staying here, because I believe that the help we seek exists wherever we are, whenever we're ready to recognize where that help is. I had somebody come to me in California. A friend of mine brought his brother to me who was contemplating suicide, and he said, "Would you talk to him?" And I said, "Sure." So he came over and we talked, and he said he was thinking, and I said, "Well, you know, you want to commit suicide because you want to escape what you think are your problems here, and you think when you commit suicide they're going to go away." And he said, "Yes, that's right." And I said, "But your problems are emotional, and you take your emotions with you. So how can committing suicide solve the problems for you? You'll get another chance. You'll come back again, and you'll try again to resolve those issues. But since you're here, and you put a lot of creativity into getting here, why not just see if you can see it through here while you're already here?" Because I really believe that I don't think there's any God in heaven who's condemning people who commit suicide. I just think it's a choice. You know, you get overpowered and you don't think you can deal with what's going on in your life. But you've chosen those challenges, and if you can't cope with it, then okay, you leave, and then you come back again with a better idea for how to cope with it. That's all. I don't think it's as I know it's hard for families who have to go through it. But it's also about trusting, too. It's also about trusting that after all, we are autonomous beings, and we can make decisions. We can make those decisions. If we're determined to make them, nobody's going to be able to stop us. But if you know that it's not going to make the problems go away, then you're likely to think, well, maybe I'll try, you know, working harder a little here. It's not going to make it go away. I'm going to come back and I'll have to work on it again. It's like, it's no different than when you're in your life living it and you have a problem and you think if you move to another job, the problem's going to go away. But you take yourself with you into the next job, and so you have the same issues in that job that you had in the last job, because you're at a stage of your growth where you need to deal with what's going on. And it doesn't matter if you move into 5 more jobs. If you haven't dealt with the issue that needs to be dealt with, it's going to be there in every job you come to. So you might as well deal with it in the job you have right now.
I share that perspective that everything is mind. And that if you die, my perspective is that the body collapses and the mind continues to exist. But you made one statement. That is your choice. It's a choice that we make. So that makes me ask you this question. Do you believe that we have, and this is kind of a trick question here, okay? I mean, it's not, but it kind of is complete, and that's the word that makes it tricky. Do you believe that we have complete free will?
I do. I think we have free will, yes. I think that
has to be complete free will. I have to be careful of this question. Of course, we have free will, but do you have complete free will? Do you think
how do you define complete when you're saying that? What's the difference between free will and complete free will?
Okay, imagine that you're a 2-year-old sitting in the back seat of a car in a car seat, and it has a little yellow steering wheel. This is a story I asked this question to many people that come on my show. Imagine that you're a 2-year-old sitting in a car seat with a little yellow steering wheel in the back seat. And the higher power, your mother or father or God or source or whatever you want to call it, driving in the front seat. You're driving down the road and you come to a 4-way stop and the playground's on the right and the grocery store is on the left. Source is going to the grocery store. You say, all right, man, I'm going to the playground today. Whose steering wheel is going to work? If we have complete free will, then your steering wheel is going to work.
Okay, well, free will in terms of emotional decisions as opposed to illusionary decisions. I mean, if you're a child and you're a 2-year-old, then you're under the control of your parents to a certain extent in terms of what you can and you can't do. And it's a good thing that's true. Because at the age of 2, you don't have the judgment that you need to make a decision about whether you're going to the grocery store or the playground at a certain time.
Okay, well, let's say that you're a grown-up, and you call somebody. You're going to meet your friend at Starbucks at 3 o'clock, and you have a flat tire on the way, and you don't get, or you get lost. You're not there at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Had every intention of being there at 3 o'clock. Why aren't you there at 3 o'clock if you have complete free will?
Well, because this is a challenge that we set. I think we set up a challenge. I mean, I'm not sure
the question is, because years ago, and everybody knows my story, okay, so this is not a surprise to any of my listening audience. Years ago, I was going through a really terrible divorce. And I'm not trying to fight with you either. I think about a lot. Mm-hmm. But I was going through a really bad divorce. And this was before I knew all the things that I know today about nutrition and alternative medicine and supplements and energy healing and all that. It was back when I was before my enlightenment and before I knew about nutrition. And so I went to my allopathic doctor and I said, doctor, I'm going through a divorce and I can tell that I'm getting depressed. I got to be able to maintain stability. Please give me an antidepressant. So he gave me an SSRI. So the SSRI made me suicidal. And I did things. I did things, serious things. For example, I sat in my car with a hose pipe in my car for 3.5 hours and nothing happened. Then I took a knife and slit the artery in my arm, and I bled a little bit, and then it just stopped, and nothing happened. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I can't even die when I want to die. And this all happened within like 2 or 3 weeks, okay? Then I took 60 Klonopins. No, sorry, 60 Ambiens and 90 Klonopins, and nothing happened. I got sleepy, but nothing happened. So if I had complete free will, then I should have checked out of here. But I went, and I went to the doc, to the hospital. My daughter took me to the hospital, and the doctor did a drug test because they didn't know what I took, and they didn't believe me. And the doctor said, there's nothing in your system. You just did this to get attention. This was like 15 or 20 years ago. Where did it go? If I had complete free will, then I would have checked out that day. Where did it go?
I think that's an amazing story. I mean, that sounds like a miracle to me. It sounds like the soul saying, sorry, it's not time to go.
Exactly. So my perspective has changed that because I used to think we had complete free will, and now I say, you know what? You're not driving the car, and we can't do anything because we're not driving the car.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, I don't think we control everything that's going to happen to us. And other people are living their lives around us, and they may do something that alters our life. But we may not be able to control that the life has been altered. But we do control how we react to it. We do control how we deal with it, whether we see it in a positive way and an incentive for growth, or whether we see it as the blame game, which I did for so long. And
I totally
agree
with that.
Yeah.
I was just curious about it, somebody else's perspective about what happened. You know, when those things happen that we can't control, you're absolutely right. I believe that it's perspective. Thank you for sharing
that. And I'm sure that. But I also believe that before we get here, that it's no different than when we plan a vacation. When we plan a vacation, now we decide where we're going to go. We decide how long we're going to stay there. We decide what we're going to do when we're there, and we take with us whatever we need for enjoying that vacation. And so I think that that's what we do before we come here, and we set up the challenges that we think are going to be important to our progress. And for me, I mean, I love that story because it's so miraculous to me, showing you the power of your soul and look where you've come from that, and from where you were, you wanted to leave here, to where how you feel now. I mean, that's quite a story.
Well, I have to say that I think about that. It seems to be like a swing, energetically. You know, whatever degree. I mean, however high the swing goes up with passion, you know, excitement and thrill in the world, and whatever, however high it goes up, that it also comes back that way, the opposite way. And I find that in my life it happens to be in about 2-year cycles, and I don't know why that is. And I ask all my guests are normally scientists. And we talk about consciousness and quantum mechanics, and I always ask them in their lives, have you had a dark night of the soul, and have you found that that happens about every 2 years or so? And they all say yes. So I wonder, did that happen to you?
I wouldn't say there's a 2-year cycle, but I would say this, that I think that everybody's life is individually designed for whatever they believe or their soul believes will make them progress. I think that's one of the beautiful things about being here, that nobody's answers come the same way. You know, our answers come differently.
Well, I think that maybe has something to do with intention and how, you know, are you walking in the middle of the road, or are you walking on either side somehow? I don't know. It's just stuff I think about.
It's very interesting. Yes, I loved hearing about that. Very.
What about hate? Everybody has to deal with that at some point in their lives for some reason.
Well, I think that there are different definitions for hate. Some people might call it fear or envy or anger. Maybe they call it passion, ridicule. I think everybody has a different definition of hate. The point is, if you give your interpretation of hate to other people, then other people are going to give their interpretation of hate to you, because that's about how the mirror works. And I think that one of the big ideas for me to grasp was that the universe doesn't make judgments about good, wrong, right, good, bad, wrong, or right. It simply sends you your mirror because it thinks that everything is love. So if I'm giving hate to somebody else, the universe interprets that as my interpretation of love. And therefore it says, oh, Betsy thinks that love is hate, so let's give her lots more of what she loves, which is hate from other people. That was like a big turnaround for me to realize that no matter what I'm doing, the universe is interpreting it as my expression of love. And therefore the universe gives me more of whatever I say I love. And when I say that to some people, they go, oh, wait a minute, oh. Hold on there, wait a minute, because they don't want to deal with it that way. They want to think that if they're unkind to somebody, that doesn't necessarily that the universe isn't interpreting that as something they want back.
that's
the way it works.
Mhm. It's a good way to put that. All right, let's go to that's a good one. Can't stay monogamous. I see that in the world so much, especially when I was working out in the world.
Yes. Well, there's no judgment in my book about that. It's just that you miss what monogamy offers. If we're not monogamous, we're polygamous. It's pretty much either or unless we abstain. And I don't think it's about the idea of monogamy being better or worse than polygamy or abstinence. It just simply is. And every choice has its reward and limitations. If I'm confused or if somebody is confused about their reward from the choice they have made, they probably don't like the mirror they've created from the choice they have made. But they're probably going to attract to them somebody who is not, I mean, monogamy, if you're a polygamist and you're out with a lot of different people, then you're probably going to attract people to you who are doing the same thing you are, because energy isn't going to find you that isn't compatible with you. So you just have to ask yourself, what is it you want to receive? And it doesn't always necessarily mean picture for picture. In other words, if you are in a marriage and you aren't monogamous in the marriage, it doesn't necessarily mean that your wife is going to be out being running around with other men too, but in some way she's going to reflect the energy that you're putting out in a different way, or maybe the same way, but it could be a different way, but the emotions will be the same. And if the emotions don't stay the same in that situation, then they separate because you automatically move on to the energy that is compatible with you. Okay. I don't think it's about good, wrong, and bad, and right. Good, bad, wrong, and right. I don't think the universe is judging it that way. It's just saying, well, if this is what you consider to be love, then we'll send you back lots more of it. And so if disloyalty is your interpretation of love, then the universe sends you back disloyalty in other people. It may not be from your mate, it may not be from your friend, it could be at the office and your job, it could be anywhere. It comes back to you in a way that will impact you for the growth that you need. And so that's what the chapter is about.
I'm going to ask you two more of your questions and I'm going to let you talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Okay.
Cutting in front of others, that makes me think about people on the freeway that's, cutting people off or hurrying up and, getting in front of them or not stopping at the red light or pulling out. I don't know why that comes to my mind. I guess maybe because I went to Atlanta last weekend. That's what I experienced. But anyway.
Well, when I started writing this book or writing that chapter, that is what I noticed all the time when I was writing this chapter, because it seems to me that each chapter I came to, there was something going on in my life that was relevant to that chapter, that was helping me with the chapter and showing me how it works. And it seemed to me, and I was in California at the time, and driving on the freeways out there is quite a thing. But I mean, I would see somebody cut in front of somebody, and then four cars up, somebody would cut right in front of them. I think it's the same principle, just working out in a different venue. You can make up all kinds of excuses to explain your rudeness if you're cutting in front of other people to get somewhere in a hurry or to get somewhere because you're late. You can make up excuses. You can rationalize it. But the universe doesn't recognize rationalization or excuses. It simply returns to you what you give to others. And so it's beautifully simple in that it's always, you're always living in balance, always receiving what you give. It's just that it's sometimes hard to admit it.
Well, you said something in your book. There was a sentence that I liked, something about if you cut in line, you miss something or that you would have gotten if you had stood there longer. That's what I came away. I don't know if you said that, but I came away with that thought. That made a lot of sense to me. Because if you stand there longer, you may make a connection or you might have some beautiful thing or experience or I don't know, but you miss something if you're not standing. If you're going to stand in line 15 minutes and you cut ahead and you only stand in line 5 minutes, there's a whole 10-minute window of something that you could have received a blessing from that you missed for doing that.
If you're standing in line and then you cut in front of the person who's in front of you, then you're going to be, something's going to be cut out of your life that you want.
Yeah, that's what I got. Okay, yes. The last question I'm going to ask you is about believing in ascension. Well, that's the last question, unless you don't have anything to say. Talk about that. I thought that was a very interesting thing.
Yeah, well, I think ascension is something that we're living every day, and I think that every time we choose to love instead of hate, we ascend a little bit. I think it's a gradual process of light filling our body, and everywhere we go, we are meeting other light beings, and we decide how to feel about them and how to think about them, and some of the light we meet into feels wonderful and some does not, but the more we stay in the wonderful feeling light, the lighter we become. And as we fill ourselves with the light of eternity, we walk right into the light we represent. Then everywhere light is, we are. But I think it's a day-by-day process and mastery. I don't think it happens overnight. I don't think it's any different from someone mastering a piano. They start out with the scales and they gradually improve their skills and they get better and better. And ascension is about going within, not going without. So we learn to go deep within, and the deeper we go, the more light we feel and the more we understand who we truly are and the energy we represent. But this is a process, and anyone who has tried to meditate will understand this, that you don't decide to meditate and then sit down and then all of a sudden you have a fantastic meditation. It takes practice and it takes discipline and it takes the determination to go deeper within and to have this be a priority in your life. And I think that whatever you prioritize is going to expand, and I don't think ascension, the idea of ascending to a light being, is any different from any other kind of mastery. It takes time and it takes determination and the will to succeed.
So is it something that happens quickly or is it some subtle thing that happens over time?
I think it's something that happens over time. I believe that when we first created human beings and we decided to come here, that we could come here and leave whenever we felt like it. We could lower our vibration to come into matter and to stay as long as we wanted to. And when we wanted to leave, we would heighten our vibrations so that we would turn back into pure light. And after we started coming here,
that didn't work for me.
Pardon me?
That did not work for me.
The idea of it?
Well, I couldn't leave. Tried three times, I couldn't leave. So there's that free will question again.
But this is not about, I'm talking about before we got, when we first came into this planet, when human beings first entered this planet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm talking about when we knew who we were. We knew we were this pure, wonderful energy, and we decided to play the game in matter, and we came here as pure energy, and then we lowered our vibrations to create a body. And when we first came here, I think we came back and forth whenever we felt like it, and we created different kinds of bodies, and we created animals to cavort with, and we just came in and out of, if we stayed here for a while and then we wanted to leave, we just heightened our vibrations and we left. And I think what happened was we started staying longer and longer and longer. And as we stayed longer and longer and longer, we began to some of us began to forget who we were. And I think that we were even some people who were remembering who they were living beside others who were forgetting who they were. And then the people who were forgetting where they were getting jealous of the people who were remembering who they were. And then it was all those feelings started coming of envy and jealousy and all the things that we now know as we think of being normal. But I think that it was a time when it wasn't like that. And I think that when you decide that you want to study something like ascension, you're realizing that the inside of you and what is going on inside of you and your heart and your feelings and your love has taken a priority over the things in the outside of your life.
That makes sense to me. So we have about 10 or 12 minutes, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can talk about disease if you'd like. If you don't know, something doesn't pop up to your head.
Well, that's a chapter in the body, if I stay in destructive thought. And I believe it's the same idea of energy. The body is reflective energy, and so the body reflects in the body what is going on in the mind. And I can give you a personal experience where I had a healing in this idea, because when I came back from California and I was around my family again, all the old issues that I had had before I went to California were all coming back, and I was having all these resentment feelings towards people in my family who I felt had treated me wrongly, and I was harboring it, and repeating it in my mind over and over and over for the first couple of months after I got back here, and one day I realized I had a lump in my back, and I have a history of cancer in my family, so I went to the doctor, and she said, yes, you do have a lump in your back, and she knew my family history, and she said, I want you to go in tomorrow morning for an MRI, and I said, okay. So I came home, and the first thing I did was I pulled out Louise Hay's book to see what lumps represented, and they represented resentment and grudges. So I did a very deep meditation that night where I was thinking and asking myself, what did I learn from the way my family reacted to my decisions? What did it propel me to do? What did I find that was good from that happening? So I went through this exercise of asking myself, where was the positive in what had happened instead of the negative, which is what I had been focusing on for 3 months. And as I did this, I went deeper and deeper into a meditation, and I realized that There were good things. They had propelled me their reaction to my decisions had propelled me to take decisions in my life that were good for me and that had led me to this writing and had led to my life changing. And as I did this exercise for myself in the meditation, I felt this creamy cream of light come all the way up through my body. It was the most amazing feeling. I get goosebumps every time I talk about it, Eva. And so I said, wow, I didn't know what happened, but I knew it felt wonderful. So I went in for the MRI the next morning, and the doctor told me she'd call me in the afternoon and tell me what the results were. And so she called. She said, well, it didn't show up on the MRI, but I want you to go in for some more tests. And I said, well, before I do that, I have to tell you what happened. I told myself when I came back from California I wasn't going to go to any doctors anymore, that I couldn't express who I was to that doctor, and it would be okay. So I told her exactly what I had done and what I thought might have happened. And she said, well, come in this afternoon and let me take a look. So I went in, and she said, the lump is gone. And she said, I don't know, Betsy, about what you say happened. All I know is that the lump is gone. And so I believe that what the body was showing me was something that I needed to look at inside of me. And as soon as I looked at it and I understood it and I moved through it and I could bless the people who I had been complaining about and holding grudges before, the body said to me, oh, she gets it, so there's no reason for the lump to stay. She gets it.
Was your book dictated to you? Just curious.
Yes, I feel like it was, but there's two sides to that story, and the feelings that came through me were all, I feel, from spirit, but my skill at interpreting those feelings has grown. So that's why I'm writing, that's why I wrote the revised version, because I knew that I could express the ideas more clearly for others now than I could do it 15 years ago.
That makes sense to me, too.
It's sort of like I had to catch up with spirit.
So is there anything that you would like to talk about that we've not talked about?
Well, I'd like to talk about the idea of it's coming to me about trusting our life and trusting our path, and even trusting the idea that, when you're telling me about how you tried to commit suicide, I'm thinking to myself, what a creative way of creating your challenges. I mean, your soul not letting you go, and I'm sure that you planned that because for some reason in your life that was what you needed to spur you on and to help you to question and to force you to think about these ideas. And I was thinking how wonderful it is that everybody's life is different in their path to more, understanding their own spirituality, but so beautifully individual and perfect for the person who is living it. And so I just want to reassure people to trust their path and to trust that the soul is guiding you and has you where you need to be and has you with learning the growth that you need to grow, because you can't, it's the same idea of you can't build a house by building the roof first. You have to build the foundation, and that's what's happening. We're all working on our foundation so that the house that we represent becomes more complete.
Well, I have to say one thing that I learned from that experience, and there have been other experiences in my life. My daughter got raped a few years ago by a gang, and I found her dead in her bed. And so there have been, that swing thing has happened, you know. But we got her back alive, so she's great today, and she's on her path. But what I learned from these things, because I seem to do those real extravagant swings, is if I stay strong and hold on, and not react to the situation and do something, get upset or take some action, it slides on by and I don't go down the rabbit hole. I don't know if that makes any sense or if you can elaborate.
Yes.
Now you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes,
if you can
I do.
Elaborate
yes.
to people or explain in a better way maybe perhaps than I do. But if I just stay grounded and I don't latch on and go down that, like watching a Nickelodeon, keep it flipping and not go down into one single picture, everything
yeah.
always works out okay, and I always end up taken care of. Don't know how
yeah.
to describe that, but perhaps you can elaborate a
well,
little bit.
Well, it works for me. Like I was in such a habit of blaming other people for so long that my moment of hesitation was to be able to say, wait a minute, what does this have to do with me instead of the other person? Because I was always focused on the other person and, you know, everybody being, people being cruel to me or, you know, it was their fault that I had all my problems. And so for me, it's when something happens that challenges me to not blame, it's like I take that moment that you take, but I take it in a way that I say, wait a minute, this is not about the other person. This is about me and my growth. And what is it for me to learn? What is this teaching me that I need to know? Where is the gift in this? Where is the gift in what is happening for me? And that then sometimes it takes me a couple days to get there. Sometimes it happens right away. But that's the path. It's the method that works for me, but it's just as beautiful as yours. It's just done a little, just maybe it's the same path, it's just expressed differently by each of us.
I think so too. So we have about 4 or 5 minutes. Is there anything else you want to cover?
Well,
any experience?
One of the favorite chapters of seems to be for people now, they like the one about what happens if I do what I love but the money doesn't come. And the answer really is that money isn't the reward for doing what you love. Happiness is. I think people got caught up in that phrase because it was kind of clever 10 or 15 years ago, and So then people think, have this expectation that if they do what they love, somehow it's all supposed to pour in. But when I started writing, I didn't make any money from writing. But when I committed to the writing, I got this job that I had for the next 18 years working for this man. Then the money started pouring in. It just wasn't pouring in from the writing, but it was still pouring in. And so we have to trust that we do what we love and find the happiness from doing what you love. And if you need to supplement your, you know, another job to earn some money, then do it happily, because the job is keeping you in the place where you can continue to expand your passion.
So what, let's, unless you have something else, and I'm going to ask you a question about children.
Okay.
Tell us about our children and our relationships with our children. Let's just say, I don't see children and parents being close today like I believe they should be because of technology. You know, people send texts, I love you. But we don't touch our children. So what is going on energetically there? Does that make sense?
Well, this is all I know, really, truly, when I think about it. I think that the children today have chosen to be here and to be exposed to whatever influences they have. And I think that when we were born, we chose to be born at a time when we had the influences we need. Because I think even to that extent, we choose a time to be born when we feel that the challenges we need are present. And so for some reason, the children who are born at this time and are dealing with that idea, for some reason they believe that their life is going to make sense to them if they can overcome the challenges that are around that idea. And in my experience with these ideas that I have in my book, it's about trusting that everybody is wise enough to know when they need to come here, and everybody is wise enough to know the challenges they need, and are wise enough to know that they are capable of dealing with the challenges that they are given. And so I can't trust my own life unless I'm willing to trust that others are living the life that they need to live.
I can't argue with that. So do you want to take a few minutes again and tell everybody where they can find you and your books and your website?
Yes. My website is www.betsythompson.com, and all the information about me is there, and they can go to Amazon and put in books by Betsy Otter Thompson, and the books come up. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on YouTube. I'm on LinkedIn and Goodreads.
Excellent. So thank you, Betsy. I hope you'll come back sometime. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you. I would love to come back anytime. Thank you for having me.
Let me know when you finish your books.
Okay, I will.
Take care. Have a good week.
Okay. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.